G'day party animals, Ed Wilson, your host of Gaberhood here, coming back, flying back down into your ears. I hope you enjoy this episode today. We're with Rob Goddard of Lifting Stones Coaching. We're going to learn and hear about the ups and downs of being Rob, being different with a dad who finds it hard to be frank and open, having 100,000 followers. What the hell's that like? What's that all about? Twerps and trolls, has life become harder, more toxic, and less simple than ever before? I think we're all going to assume the answer is yes, and we're all going to blame social media, so tune in to get excited. We do go there. We go up, around, down, inside out, and all over the place. This is easily the least structured episode we've ever recorded, but I think it was fun, and I hope you'll think so too. Another note, this is quote-unquote season 2, episode 13. There is still absolutely minimal editing, so expect it to be unfiltered, unedited, unmonitored. It's fun. Welcome back to Gaberhood, the podcast bringing us closer to each other and ourselves, one gay at a time. Today, we're meeting Rob Goddard. Howdy, neighbor. Welcome to Gaberhood.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Hopefully. We'll see. let's start with self-introductions. What are the basic details that you'd like the viewers to know, listeners to know about you?
So, I am 34 years old. I'm born and raised in northern Canada in a little town called Smithers. And I transitioned my life to Australia about 12 years ago. Where I now live in Brisbane and am a mindset confidence men's coach.
Beautiful. You also spent several years in Sydney first?
I did. I was there for 10 years.
10, yeah. So that's a big deal. Most of your Australian experience so far is still Sydney, yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah, cool. Rob, I heard you're a gay man, right? Let's just check.
This is very true.
You're a he-him gay man.
Cool. Yep.
I heard you've been on The Amazing Race.
I was back in 2014.
Oh my God. Was this the pairs one where you team up with somebody or all by yourself? Yeah.
No, this was the pairs. So I partnered with my best mate back home. We were bartending buddies named Ryan.
Wow.
Ryan Steele, if you watch this, there's a little shout out for you.
Hey, Ryan. Are you still friends after The Amazing Race?
We are. And just the fact that I've shouted him out, he'll love it. Like, it'll go straight to his head.
Oh, nice. Okay, good. Big ego.
It's great.
That's lovely. You know, me and my partner have joked for years that we must never, ever, ever go on The Amazing Race because we definitely wouldn't survive it. I'm not sure that that's true, but I like the joke. So what was the experience like? Like, how challenging is it? What is it like to be a competitor?
It's being on adrenaline for 5 weeks straight.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like when you're racing, you don't think about the bathroom, you don't think about eating. Some legs are longer than others, right? Some might be a couple hours, some might be 12 hours. But during that time, all you think about is getting to the mat, right?
Yeah, and being the fastest.
And seeing John at the mat. And
yeah.
And so, you know, aside from being on adrenaline for 5 weeks, the relationship can be challenged to certain degrees. And Ryan and I were very fortunate to have such a really great relationship. I'm a very calm-minded man. I don't get hot-headed really fast. Neither does Ryan. There's a lot of communication between us, but some couples absolutely lost it with each other.
Yeah.
And
Part of the show.
Absolutely. And, you know, we probably had only two tiffs during the whole season.
Nice.
And that was when we're in Paris. Or no, was it Paris? It was in Montreal. And we had to do a cheese challenge, which was grilled cheese. So there's 10 types of cheeses which were in grilled cheese, and we had to taste them, memorize the name by the taste, and then run about, I'd say, 50 meters, and then have a blind tasting and match it off taste.
That's a great challenge.
Yeah, and it was surprisingly very difficult because the cheese starts to taste the same after a while. I was a bit under the weather, so my taste buds were probably all whacked. That's what I'm going with. But yeah, we ended up coming last, and then it started pissing down with rain, and we got a little short with each other. We couldn't find a cab. It was just one of those legs.
That's cool. Where did you come overall?
We did the whole race. We came third.
Third. Well done. Congratulations. Yeah, you know, the thing I'm most impressed about is that you're still friends.
Oh, yeah. We had such a fun time, and we actually did apply for first season, and we were the runner-up team. So if somebody bowed out, then we would be put in. So they emailed us the following year and say, hey, if you want to audition again, we'd love to have you. So we just made this quirky little video. Ryan's a sketch comedian. Mm-hmm. So he's good with all that stuff. So we made a really cute video. We're like, hey, it's us again. You may not remember us, but you know, you rejected us last year. So here's the deal. You know, we're willing to give you guys a second chance on having us on your show. And, you know, just made it very comical.
Nice.
And had fun with it, right?
So, yeah, cool. As you do. And that's what they want to see, is a TV crew. So well done.
100%.
Yeah. 100%. Wonderful. Hey, that's really cool. Good for you guys. Now, on Gayborhood, we like to talk about our gay life history and story.
All right.
And you're no different, I guess. You're just a man. You've been on The Amazing Race. You're a coach. And just between us coaches, we've got everything sorted out. And life is so easy for us. And we wake up fresh every day.
Absolutely. If only.
But just the merely mortal, simply human part of you. Mm. When, if ever, did he or you realize that you were, quote unquote, different?
An early age, I'd say. Definitely, I would say 6 or 7, I reckon. But growing up in a small town, you only knew what was in front of you, and that was heterosexual relationships. I didn't see anything gay, so that's all. I knew there was something different, but I had girlfriends growing up because that's all I knew, right? And then I guess there was times where you sitting there and I'm like, you know, I need to have that white picket fence with a wife and kids. And I remember thinking that I'm like, I need to make this lifestyle happen. Mm. And it was almost a part of me was trying to fight the unknown, that part of me that I didn't quite understand yet.
Mm, fair enough. What was it that you were realizing that made you different? Was it anything specific or just feelings?
It was, I'd say, and I'm sure you've heard this many times, but it was seeing my teachers. And there was a couple of my teachers I found, actually younger age, I'd say before I got into high school, it'd probably be the internet.
Right. But you said 6 or 7. What was it you were realizing at 6 or 7?
I don't know what it was that kind of made me feel different. It was just, I knew that I felt different.
Right.
There was a part of me that was uncomfortable being around my dad. Mm. He was an angrier man, but also one memory I always have was we're driving in the truck and I think there was somebody walking on the street in our town who was dressed a bit different and could have been a gay guy or something, but he said something and it made me feel uncomfortable.
Mm.
He said something in regards to this person and it made me feel uncomfortable. Mm. And that's probably my earliest memory of having some kind of experience with him that related to someone different.
Mm. Mm. And that the difference was clearly a bad thing. And then you're like, oh no, 100%. I'd better not be different.
Yeah. And it was, I did grow up not afraid to be comfortable around my dad.
Yeah.
Damn. Right. And it was, it's to this day, right? It's affected our relationship. And it's only been till recent, and we're going to go a bit deep here. It's only till, God, the last 2 years when I made peace with accepting that the relationship that I wanted with my dad that I never had was never going to happen.
Mm.
And I have to figure out what that relationship does look like, if anything. I would like a relationship with my dad, but I don't know what it looks like right now. And so right now, you know, there isn't any relationship. Mm. And that's my choice because of my focus is different and elsewhere right now. So,
yeah.
But
would you say you're familiar with your requirements for anyone to have a relationship with you, there's a certain level of minimum requirements, and he seems unwilling to meet them.
Requirements,
you know, respect.
Yeah, there's, and here's the thing, my dad's not a bad guy at all, right? He actually, you know, when I first came out to him, it was not met well. We didn't talk for about a year and a half. My sisters described him as someone had died in the family, his response, mm-hmm. right? And it wasn't, obviously, I came home with my first boyfriend who was 20 years older than me. So you can imagine having your son come out and then bringing a much, much older boyfriend home at 18 years old. You can understand how uncomfortable that would be for a father. Sure. But grateful that my first partner, Wayne, was just an amazing guy, really outgoing, really personable. And my whole family had met him prior, but so they're harping on my dad to pull his head in and grow the fuck up, right? And, you know, this is your son. So after meeting Wayne and my family meeting Wayne, I think it made that process a lot easier and smoother moving forward. And Wayne became part of the family right away. But with my dad, I think it was after his dad died, to be honest. When his dad died, he turned a leaf. When his best mate died, he turned a leaf. And he became a huge supporter of mine. And when I was in Mr. Gay World competing in the Manila, Philippines.
You didn't tell me that.
Surprise!
Yeah, okay. Back to Mr. World competition.
I'm a sash girl.
For those listening, this isn't a visual medium, but if you don't know yet, Rob is extremely uncommonly good looking.
Oh, stop it.
We both know it's true, Rob, so carry on.
My cat likes me. That's all that matters.
Oh.
But yeah, no, so you can imagine having your son competing in a competition like that.
Sorry, is it a gay comp? Like,
yes.
Okay.
It's gay.
Yeah, because it's pretty fucking gay.
Yeah, like, it, you know, and I think there was how many other countries? I think there was 18 other countries I was competing with. Nice. And, but yeah, got to fly to Manila, Philippines, and my dad was online, and there was a voting thing online, and my dad was getting his mates to vote for me and all that stuff, right? Like that, and that's what I mean, like that kind of turnaround and that support.
Nice.
And so he turned a leaf, but we still never talked about the gay thing. We never talked about my coming out letter to him that I wrote, which took me about a week to write because I was breaking down while writing it. And you know, my partner at the time was like, you need to deal with this stuff with your family before we can move forward. And that was part of me coming out to my parents. Right. So, we never talked about relationships that I was in. He never asked how my partners were. And it was just when we were together, when we did have those family things, it was just, I guess it was this energy in the air. Like, how do we communicate? What do we have in common? And I felt growing up, I've always had to accommodate his comfort levels. And to the point where I got tired of that. And I guess living my life around making this man feel comfortable. Right? So it was, it just got to a point where I said enough, and I'm like, you know, I step forward and I write him a letter and I become vulnerable, and it shot back with walls, so to speak, or avoidance and all that stuff.
Yeah. Sounds like your dad needs a life coach.
Oh God. Yeah. Right.
But hey, do you, now that you're where you're at now and you've had your experience, do you see how the opportunity to face all of that, experience all of that, has given you an opportunity to learn, grow, explore?
Yeah, it's, you know, going through my own stuff with my dad and seeing the type of man my dad is, he's very shut off. He's at walls are up. He doesn't want to talk about anything vulnerable. I've only seen him cry once, and I was sitting by a pool with him. We're on family vacation and we were drinking, and my sisters went up to the room and he was sharing a bit about some family stuff that happened in the past, and he started crying in front of me. And I was sitting there, I was like, what the fuck's going on? Mm. And I was texting my sisters, I'm like, Dad's crying in front of me. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I was like, this is all new for me. And they're like, yeah, he does that when he gets drunk.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And, but, you know, my last experience with him was, which was kind of the nail, not nail in the coffin, but it was kind of what made me have to pull back a lot more, was when I wrote a letter to him again, expressing how I was feeling, amongst other things. But when he responded to it, he responded to the things that weren't the vulnerable things that I was coming across with. Mm. And so the really important stuff that I needed a response for was not even met, and it completely ignored. And it was so frustrating. And but because of that, and because of the person my dad is, and not dealing with his shit, so to speak, it's kind of made a bit of a drive in me, because I know there's a lot of other men, and I hated the way it's made me feel and how it's affected me and having that relationship. And I know that overcoming those barriers can definitely strengthen relationships.
And strengthen a man?
Strengthen a man, strengthen relationships, strengthen confidence.
Yeah.
You know, when we go into vulnerability, as you know, vulnerability amongst men is on the rise, and there's such a push for it, and it's celebrated.
So might I suggest, this is a recent phenomenon, and I guess we should get into a talk about, like, is your dad the poster child for limited masculinity, also known as toxic masculinity?
100%.
Yeah, limiting masculinity. It's about saying a man can do all of these things, but a man is not this. A man does not do this. And it's like, well, what about all of a man? Like, is some part of a man that's real not manly? Like, if he's a man, isn't that part of him? So it's the limiting masculinity. Yeah. Backtracking 10 seconds. I pulled us on a segue to explain toxic masculinity. Where were we? There was a something.
We're talking about my dad?
That was the big thing. What was the, there was a little, it always comes back.
Trust the journey. Just trust the journey.
I always do. It always comes. I'm trying too hard to grab it again. Let's move forward. It'll probably come back.
Yep.
What? So.
So what got me into coaching is what you're asking.
Was I? I don't think I was.
Well, no. Fine, it wasn't.
I don't think I've asked that yet. I'm confident that I've not asked that yet, because it comes later. But sure, what got you into coaching? Tell us.
because now I want to go back to your other question. You know?
We need to organically let it come back to us.
It will come back to us. Mm. But I think just seeing how my dad was got me into wanting to help people like him, but also not turning out like that myself.
Yes.
And so I, not on my mission, but it's, I put myself in positions of being more vulnerable, being an open book. And it wasn't probably only to the last 2 years where I started sharing a lot more and really going in depth with my mom's situation and all that stuff. There's a lot of stuff that I've really kept behind the scenes of my personal life, because on social media, right, I represent myself as someone who is a positive person, a motivating person, inspiring, etc. But I've had all this shit going on behind the scenes that, you know, I didn't feel like sharing with the world, because that's not the energy I wanted to put out.
Yeah. And as well, I suspect you were probably still on your own personal journey of
100%.
Feeling really okay about having what let's call non-positive things. I frequently talk to clients about, you said before, my dad's not a bad guy. I don't actually really anymore believe in good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Not really, because I've come to realize that judgment and those phrases imply judgment, but without being a word Nazi, your dad's your dad. He's experiencing what he's experiencing. And these things in our lives, like, say, I think your mum's difficulties were medically related.
Addiction.
Addiction, right. So that's a quote-unquote negative thing, right?
Mm.
But it also is just a common, it's a real and a normal and a common human experience. But of course, we judge it and we label it as bad or wrong or a moral failing, and therefore it becomes this negative, shamey thing.
Yeah.
But addiction happens to people for reasons.
Absolutely.
Why should we need to label it, judge it, make it negative, drive it underground? So that's the journey.
Yep.
Your journey, anyone's journey out of limiting or toxic masculinity, or a rejection of self, or the rejection of your humanity, or the rejection of someone else and their humanity.
I like that.
It's powerful, isn't it? So Rob has over, you're probably cottoning on, dear listeners, if you don't know him already. And full disclosure, I'm quietly hopeful that your popularity rubs off on the podcast. It's not.
It could.
I hope so.
Possibly.
It's not why I brought you on the podcast. I like you and your content. You're a very interesting dude, actually. But yeah. If you don't know yet, Rob has over 100,000 followers on Instagram and has been a fitness instructor. You've done many, many things. You've been Mr. World. You're extremely uncommonly good looking. That helps generate followers, no doubt. This is Rob. This is where he comes from. This is Rob's life.
I am full of adventure. I love spontaneous adventure. I like constantly doing things that are different and that are challenging me. I can't study something without starting a business in it.
Right.
It's the entrepreneur in me.
Yep.
But you know, I'm the kind of person that would, you know, let's say I have $700 in my account and this opportunity vacation comes up. Even though I don't have the money technically or shouldn't spend the money, I'm like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. I'm going to take it.
Oh my God. My brother's like that. It's infuriating.
I'm going to go create a memory. And I live my life by experiences and adventure and the depths of those experiences.
Nice. I don't know if you'll vibe with this or not. We've never spoken about it, but
let's talk about it now.
Sure. In some of the very end chapters and the deepest parts of a lot of the self-help content and the more spiritual content around mindfulness, I don't know if you've read The Power of Now or books like it.
I have, yep.
Oh, good.
Been a while, though.
Right. It suggests that experience itself may be the point of why we're even conscious at all. So on an extremely deep, what is the meaning of life level, it may be to be consciousness having experiences. And I'm kind of on board with that. So as you just said, the most important thing in my life to me is having experiences. I'm like, oh, that's just because your consciousness fulfilling its mission, which is simultaneously deep and kind of just funny.
There's, you know, you see these stories of people who, and recently there was a girl named Jessie Lee. I don't know if you saw. I shared about her on one of my stories, but she was the same age as I was. And she was in the network marketing space and top of her field, right? She's created billions in sales and, you know, an absolute brilliant mindset, strong mindset, motivating, inspiring, you name it. She was just one of those girls who had came from a really rough background.
Mm-hmm.
February of this year, she was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she, even though she'd received this news, she still played at 100% with her business and helping other people.
Right.
And they gave her 3 months to live.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't be like, well, I'm going to fuck my business. I'm going to go travel the world and just have a great lifestyle. No, she stayed true to her legacy that she was building and creating an impact in other people's lives, but also creating experiences and living experiences and creating depth in those. So it wasn't until September 6th, she created a video saying how she got news from her doctor. And she was told that the cancer was retracting. So it was a positive phone call. Mm. A week later, she was in hospital and there was all these posts going up, pray for Jessie Lee, right? The next day she's passed on.
Mm.
Right? And it's just crazy. And I had never met her. I'd always wanted to be coached by her as a business guru, right? But It's just crazy how someone who had all the success and was creating such an impact had her life taken away for her at 34 years old. And so it just like that, right? And so when that happened, it affected me. Like, I'd never met her, but it really affected me. I was quite emotional over it. But it just made me think, I'm like, am I truly living my best life? Am I taking advantage of every opportunity that's coming my way? Am I stepping out of my comfort zone enough? Right? Am I experiencing growth wherever I can? Am I creating an impact wherever I can? And so, you know, you think about these situations and it's just a bit of a driving factor of being more of a yes person, creating impact. What's the legacy you want to leave behind? How do you want to be remembered, right?
Because we're carving out the meaning of our own lives, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, these have become the most meaningful things to you in the living of your life. And you're gravitating towards them and holding them quite fiercely and dearly as this is what I do with Rob Goddard and his time on this earth. And eventually I won't be here anymore.
Absolutely. And you never know when your last day is coming, right?
Yeah. So, and it could be a lot sooner.
Yeah. And when you, when it comes to spending that $700 on a vacation, even though I can't afford it, I'm going to do it.
That's where it comes from.
The money, this is the thing. Money comes and goes. Experiences don't.
Yeah.
And that's my thing. And some people may disagree with that. But you can always, there's always a way to make money. You know, there's, we're in the year of 2023. There's endless ways to make an income, right? You just have to do some work and dig for it and find it. But as far as experiences and the depths of the experiences, some only come once in a lifetime.
Fair enough. Can I bring you all the way back to your gay childhood?
Oh, that's where we were.
We were once upon a time.
Like a segue.
It's absolutely what the show's all about. Did you have a first crush? How'd it go?
All right. So, let me have a quick think-sees.
Rob, I sent you the questions.
I know, but I...
What happened? Is it embarrassing? Are there too many?
No, was there not one? So this was, I was 13 years old. And I don't know if I had a first crush, but it was more of a gay experience.
Okay.
I was 13 years old. I was in Sea Cadets. My dad was the CEO. And my God, if he ever listens to this. So there was another guy named FJ. He was, he lived in another town, Kitimat, which is about 2 hours away. He was 16 years old, black, you know, but gay. Like, you knew he was gay. He was out to everyone. I wasn't out. And so I think a few of my friends knew that I was gay, but there was a night where we're over at a mutual friend of ours, Robert's, and the three of us were upstairs watching TV or whatever it was, and Robert ended up leaving the room and going to sleep in another room. And FJ and I fooled around and, you know, did foreplay and all that stuff. And the next morning, a girlfriend came over and I was just leaving or something. And I think she suspected that something had happened. But I got super paranoid and I went on this tyrant of being super homophobic and just out of fear of being called out.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, saying all the things and saying bag it and all that stuff. And I hate gay, like just whatever it was. Right. And I was just like on a mission to not have people find out that I had done the naughty in my mate's room. So it was, you know, going into high school, obviously she must have started the, or it wasn't a rumor, but she told some people and it got around high school. So I was bullied through high school and it was Rob and FJ. How's FJ Rob? All that stuff. And it got to the point. Yeah. And I was bullied through high school. I was eating lunches by myself in a library. I remember that. I know. Boo hoo. It wasn't fun.
I was just watching an episode. Sorry, quick segue. I was just watching an episode of the new season of Sex Education. And one of the characters' dads, who's a teacher at this college, eats lunch by himself on the toilet because of just awkward and difficult social things that had happened. And then my partner said to me, we're on the couch. He's like, yep, been there before.
Yeah.
So I put my arm on his shoulder. I was like, Alex, you are my favorite, and I will eat toilet. I will eat toilet. I'll eat lunch on a toilet with you in your cubicle any day.
You're like, in fact, let's go eat a meal on the toilet right now. Let's make this a positive thing. It's all about turning those negative memories and experiences into positive
ones. No, it's not, Rob. Toxic positivity is also a thing. There's nothing wrong or bad about having that experience. It probably was extremely hard and felt negative at the time. Yes, it does feel negative, but it's not bad. We just need to let go of the badness associated with certain things.
That's what I mean. And when we're going with my clients, right, on that topic, we often hold on to memories that were negative. And so how can you go back and change it into a, how can you look at it differently?
Yeah. Reframe. Right? Reframing. One of those hot words in coaching.
Yeah.
God, it's been years since I said it, but it's very real.
Yeah, but it's amazing how, you know, some people, they hold on to these things from their childhood.
100%.
Dealing with their parents. And it was like, oh, my dad did this and they did this. I'm like, okay, but if you were to go back, how else could you view it? Maybe, you know, and things like, oh, my dad was saying he loved me, but not in those words. He was showing me, you know, that he loved me in a different language. And, you know, he was doing the best he could with the tools that he had at the time, right? Yeah. So it's things like that.
That's the best one. Yeah, you can view yourself as the kid who ate lunch in the library and this is the unsaid bit, is therefore a loser and socially crap and has no future. Or you could be like, yeah, I was the kid that ate lunch in the library because
I was too cool to eat with other people.
And that's my experience.
Yeah.
And it's no longer a negative, problematic thing. It's just part of your story and it doesn't feel negative or problematic to you anymore.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is I came out before high school finished. And when I did come out, I got a lot of praise.
Yeah.
Which is the interesting thing, right? I got bullied through high school. But then when I finally came out, they're like, yay, celebrate.
Isn't that funny? Isn't that funny? I actually think people, even if they don't know that they're doing it consciously or not, can like smell the wrongness that you're hiding something from everyone and keeping a secret.
Yeah.
And then when you make it true, suddenly it flips into bravery and you get praised or admiration. We, so many things in common. I did the bully thing as well to hide my own bullshit that was going on and everyone else is a faggot and not me. And yeah, me too. I also came out in high school and the overall reaction was massively positive and I made more friends.
I never had a solid, I don't know about you, did you have a solid circle of friends you hung out with every day at high school?
Yes.
Or were you like, okay, I was more of a floater, so I knew a lot of people, but I never had a, because you have those core groups, you've got the jockeys, you've got the geeks, you've got whatever, but
you used to, apparently it's not like that anymore.
No, it's, I don't even know what's out there, it's, I don't even know what the circles are, it's just
I've heard that the kids are on their phone expressing that their they're expressing their individuality a lot more strongly online, but at school, they're actually more happy to mix, and like sexuality and gender expression is really open. And people are frequently self-reporting like LGBTQIA plusness and also not judging each other and labeling each other harshly. So it's apparently like everyone has become a floater and high school is now a kind of soup. And if you want to be an interesting weirdo, you do it online.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Ask someone in Gen Z.
It'd be interesting to see. And going slightly off topic, when I was back in my my hometown last year, I caught up with my principal and he was such a role model for me.
Oh, yep.
And, you know, I don't know if you saw my post a while ago during Wear Purple Day. I shared a story of me doing a drawing when I was going through a tough time as 13 years old. And it was a quite deep drawing that I was doing. I would freehand to express how I was feeling. And it was a forest. Every tree was cut down, so it was all these rolling hills of stumps, but there was one tree left standing all by itself and there was a doll hanging from that tree. Now this sounds like a pretty dark thing, but so when my principal came up behind me, I was sitting in the middle of the mezzanine drawing this photo. It was during class time, so nobody was around. And he came up behind me and saw this drawing. So obviously his eye is going to go to the hanging doll, worst case scenario. But what a lot of people don't know is when I was drawing this, I was resignating resonating with the tree that was standing by itself and feeling alone.
Mm.
I wasn't resonating with the doll of wanting to harm myself.
Mm.
Right, but it
so it looked like a doll that was hanging from the tree.
It was a doll hanging from a tree, right? But there was one tree left standing, and then there was a doll hanging from it.
So, okay, yep.
Yeah, the representation was, you know, I felt like the tree that was left standing alone amongst all these other ones that were cut down.
Mm.
But it was the drawing that I found online. I didn't come up with that myself.
Mm.
And so, yeah, so where was I going with that story? The principal, blah, 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 blah.
You were like, was it taken the wrong way by the principal, or it was where at Purple Day and you reconnected?
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, it was, he obviously guided me to get my help and see a counselor and all that stuff. But, you know, it's just, I lost my complete track of thought where I was going with that story.
So you had a post on your socials.
Yeah. About so there was, it was talking about the where Purple Day, and it was just all that, right? Me being vulnerable and sharing that as a kid going through those hard times.
Hmm. Nice.
Hmm.
What does Where at Purple Day mean to you today?
It is creating awareness, right? And showing young LGBT kids that they're not alone and that things can get better.
Hmm.
You know, and don't be afraid to ask for help. And I think being in a small town myself, that was, I didn't have the words to ask for help. And I think I was asking for help through my drawing.
Mm.
It was like I wanted to be caught.
I'm so glad that that worked out well for you, because my heart kind of goes out to the kids that might be inspired by Where at Purple Day to ask for help. But what if the adults around them are not helpful?
Yep. And that's how I felt with my dad, right?
Yeah.
And I found letters that I had written to my dad, and absolutely hating on him, like calling him an asshole and stuff. And, you know, we didn't have a great relationship. And when I was at my mom's, cleaning her room out, I found these letters that I'd written that I completely forgot about.
Oh no.
Yeah. Right.
And now you don't know who's read them.
Well, no, it was like, it was tucked away in her very junky drawer, but, I found a lot of letters, actually even from my mom to me, and that's a whole nother level. And yeah, so it was just, you know, one day it was tough for me to the point where I wasn't eating well. My grades were flunking. I wasn't sleeping well. I was a bit depressed, and that was partly due to my relationship with my father. And my mom would take me to work with her instead because I had such anxiety, and she actually had me sit down at her work computer and write a letter to my dad.
Yeah.
Expressing how I was feeling.
Yeah.
But, and I found that letter actually all these years later.
Mm.
Right. And this is when I was 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Hit you pretty hard.
Yeah. And there were some letters, like, you know, I found a letter from my mom that she'd written me, that she never gave to me. That was tough. Right.
Mm.
Yeah. Cleaning her room out after she had passed was a tricky day. But going into that, I knew there'd be a lot of growth from it.
Mm.
God, there's so many layers we can go into with this.
Reframe. No problem. I'm struck by the enormous sense that there is a very sensitive, emotional, gay little boy that both you were. But, you know, probably he lives to some extent still within you today. Do you like the inner self, inner child kind of stuff? Do you do any of that kind of work?
I'd like to get into it a bit more.
There's a wonderful book I believe it's John Bradshaw, Healing the Shame That Binds Us, the Shame That Binds You. I'm just going to clack around and just confirm that I got that right. Healing the Shame. Sorry for the awfulness. Google, give me the answers quickly. Yeah, it is. I was right. Good. Good for me.
Healing the Shame That Binds Us?
Yeah, but That Binds You by John Bradshaw. It is a beautiful book that anybody can read, but he does go in depth about his practice of doing inner child work and shame work with people. And because I'm a gay coach for gay men, it's immediate in the free consults. You know, it will be relevant and appropriate to raise stories and information and explorations around shame, personal shame, what happens, where it goes, how we process it, what this may be doing to us or to you, dear client, you know, in the free consult. That, yeah, for me, totally informed in a big way by that book. So I do recommend it to everybody.
Okay. Awesome. I will have written it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Shall we? Unless you want to talk about very sad, difficult events in your life, it's not required as part of this show. If it feels important and you feel called to it, would you like to go on that journey?
Or
you
have an open book. I'm an open book. Let's go with the flow.
Okay. Well, then I'll just move on to body two. But anything that comes up is welcome to come up. What do you love in your modern gay life that may be gay or may not be gay? But what do you love? Do you know what I mean? What gay stuff do you love? Is there anything about being gay or doing gay or gay stuff in the world that you love?
You know, this was the interesting. I was reading this question and I was trying to think of how I would answer it. And for me, I had this interesting situation. I went to Provincetown almost 2 months ago.
Yep. And so for people who don't know, what is Provincetown?
Provincetown is just outside of Boston, but it is very gay. It's like a little gay vacation island, so to speak.
Yeah, almost entirely populated by gays, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's just very free spirited, be whoever you want, kind of ideal. And, you know, people go there knowing what to expect. And for myself, I'm not really part, and when I'm not part of the community, I don't go to the dance parties. I don't push my gay agenda on the world.
So you do have a gay agenda.
I knew it. You know, there's people out there who are like, I'm gay, you need to respect me, and they're out there, and they're like, this is they're fighting for the rights and all that stuff. For me, I am just Rob.
Okay. That's what you meant. Okay.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I'm not into the nightclubs, and I still haven't been out in Brisbane here. I've been here a year and a half. It's just not my thing.
The Valley.
Anymore. Yeah, the Valley. I'm only two blocks away from it. And so my gay lifestyle, I've got a mix of straight and gay friends here. But it's not, I guess when I went to Provincetown, I saw the gays and I was like, oh, this is what gay looks like now.
Rob, this is the nexus of such an important topic that comes up in almost every episode of this show. And it's the reason I actually ask these kinds of questions. They used to be like, what gay stuff do you hate? What gay stuff do you love? And you know what everyone said they hated? And I've removed the question. It was this. It was that all the gay stuff feels like a copy paste, like stamped again and again and again. And it doesn't feel like there's enough diversity in the things that we could and can and do together. And it's this funny space because there must be something to this because almost all of us feel this way. But then somehow we've like, what, not created the solution? Is it that we still just don't feel welcome in the quote unquote straight circles where our interests do lie? Or is it that when we're in gay circles, we just get all caught up in our shit and forget to be just the unique snowflakes that we are without copy pasting gay onto ourselves? Do you know when you run across a gaggle of gays and then it's the same kind of jokes and wrist flipping and sassiness? Like, so many guys that I speak to are like, when I go into those spaces, I feel like I have to comply, but that's not me. But the funny thing is, Rob, 9 out of 10 guys fucking tell me that. Mm-hmm. What are we doing?
I don't know what it means to be gay anymore. And there's times where I'm thinking, I'm like, do I even qualify to be gay? Because I was like, it's like sucking dick is just not enough to be gay these days. You know what I mean?
And these days. This conundrum goes back a while. I guess you've definitely got to say that gayness is part of the queer umbrella, yeah? So we're gay men. We feel how we feel. We act how we act. That's its own level of authenticity. We can let other people be the judges of that. But we come under the queer umbrella. There's absolutely no denying that part of our queer umbrella, which includes me and you, because we probably, I don't know what you do for sex, but suck dick and have anal, blah, blah, blah with
I
men.
I go to church every day.
Do you suck dick at church? Or? Ever? Once?
This is how rumors start.
You do not need to answer that question. God, stay on track. I think the enlightened view, and I'm going to use the word enlightened very loosely, is that if you have sex with men, you're gay. And that's gay enough, and that's the only thing about you that's truly gay, and everything else doesn't deserve the label gay. But queerness overall as an umbrella has this... people use the word queer community, and that's definitely got to be... There are consistent differences, which include gender and sexual self-expression. And so whatever qualifies to be gay, it's whatever is in and amongst that, right? If you love kayaking and you're a gay man, it is both simultaneously a gay and straight activity, and the label doesn't make sense anymore. You're doing gay kayaking? Well, yes, you are. But the consistent difference is the gender and sexual self-expression.
Mm.
So we're walking this tightrope between both. But I guess what my final point here is that so many of us feel pulled into this vortex that we have to demonstrate the standard deviation from regular sexual and gender expression diversity. Like, gay men have to be a bit more fruity. Maybe gay women feel, I haven't asked any lately. Honestly, I don't know enough. I'd really have to have a lesbian bestie, but just wishing it doesn't make it come true.
Yeah, I'll send one your way.
Thank you. They Up are tools to be bartered, sold, and traded. Thank you. So I feel gay men have to be fruitier. Women may feel that they, I'd have to ask them, but they may say I have to butch up a bit. And then genderqueer people, like, oh, I have to be a radical feminist or whatever. Like, there are just these, I don't know, well-trodden, quote-unquote, gay paths. And me and you are kind of saying, and I would argue 9 out of 10 queers are saying, nah, I don't get it. I'm definitely queer. I'm definitely gay. But I don't want to keep repeating the same thing necessarily.
Yeah. So this is where I'm, you know, do you remember back in the day when being gay and fighting for gay rights was we just want to be recognized as everyone else? Don't, I'm not gay, I'm Rob. Like, I'm not gay Rob, I'm just Rob.
Yep.
But now there's this massive shift of we have to be labeled.
Well, maybe it's about, there is it positive or not?
Yeah. And it's like I felt we were fighting to not be labeled for the longest period of time. Now it's being labeled is almost a priority.
Well, this parallel, tell me if I'm getting this right or not, your position, but it sounds like the I don't see color position. It's like when black people say, I don't want to be treated as a black person, but that denies the very obvious truth that things like unconscious bias literally do exist and are happening all the time. So I don't see color is not a tenable position. So to say you're just Rob and we don't actually care about your gayness, it just ain't gonna happen, mate.
No, I don't, and I agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So
it's just I think
I just think we're not ready to achieve that kind of transformation. We could hope for it, try to work towards it, but
it was just a massive the last couple of years has just been a massive influx of pronouns, labels, this whole queer community blow up, I guess, with all these different colors coming to surface, right? And it's just, it can be overwhelming, even as a gay man.
Oh, definitely. Right? Yeah, it can overwhelm anybody. We're just human.
Yeah, I know, right?
So yeah. Those extra colorful, extra, what's the word when two crossover, intersectional, interesting, super unique snowflakes too. They're just human. They don't get it all. Yeah. They don't know everything. They don't know.
I don't even try and keep up with it anymore.
And they're overwhelmed. Right.
So really? Like, I can't. And that's the thing. When I talk about going to Provincetown and seeing it all, I was just like, oh, I've been out of the loop for a while. So yeah. I was like, okay, there were some eye-opening things I saw. I was like, oh, that's how the gays are dressing now.
Yeah.
Is that a gay or is that someone who's going through a transition, or is that a man or a girl? Like, I was just, it was just a lot of that when I was in Provincetown. And there was no judgment. It was just like, okay, eye-opening. Yeah. I've clearly been out of the loop of the queer community and what has evolved, I guess, since I've been in the circle. But here in Brisbane, I stick to myself. I focus on my business. I surround myself with good people. Being in the party.
There it is again. Good people.
Good people. Excellent people. People who are going to lift me up.
Okay.
And it's not about being seen. I guess.
Would you say you don't feel an extreme need to demonstrate or perform yourself in any kind of visibly queer, obviously gay way?
Yeah,
like, in your personal life.
Yeah, like on my social media, you go to my social media and you know, I posted about the Wear Purple Day, right? People know I'm gay. But I'm not flaunting it.
Yeah, it's not a big part of your life.
You go to my page and I am Rob, and people come to me for my cat, my plants, my positive content.
Yeah.
So I sprinkle the gay stuff as far as, you know, with some friends or, you know, but it's not the forefront of my image.
Yeah, fair enough. Nice. I think it is very appropriate and brave of you to state that all the way you did. So good for you. Yeah. I think sometimes we can be very conscious of the reactive queer community that is demanding XYZ. They might be onto something. They might be fighting the good fight. They might be on the right team, but how we do it is also everything.
Yeah.
Well,
it's, you know, and because I have such a massive following, there's an expectation on me as well that I've been not attacked, but people be like, where the fuck is your voice? You have a platform. You should be using it for this.
Oh.
Right?
And, demanding things of you.
Yeah, absolutely. When the Black Lives Matter thing was going down, right? People were going at me when, like, you haven't shared your black square, or you remember that when people just put a black square up during that time?
I actually missed that. I didn't.
Okay, yeah. So it was just a thing. It was just a single black post.
Yeah, so solidarity. Just saying, my heart goes out to you. I'm aware of the black issues.
My page, I keep off the politics. I stay away from politics. It's not my page. It's a negative energy. And I don't mean that as I don't support the things going on out in the world. It's my page is my page. And I'm going to put positive stuff out. I want to play that part in the world, right? And some people, they flaunt their images with the political stuff, which is fine. That's their page, but it's not my page. So anyways, going back to that, people came at me for not posting, but then I put a post up talking about, you know, that I'm in support of the whole movement, but I don't feel people should be pressured into, if they don't feel, what I say, people shouldn't be feel pressured or attacked if they don't choose to get involved on their terms or something like that.
Yeah.
And I got raked over the coals for that.
Yeah.
Right. And so one of my friends from Vancouver days, DJ, he was black and he came to me. He's like, hey, Rob, he's like, I saw your post and I know you got attacked. I know what you're trying to say. And I know where you stand. I just think you're a little uneducated. Right. And so he took the time to write me that message. We jumped on a phone call. We chatted for 2 hours. And he recommended me go watch the film to go educate myself, which I did. Right. And that's just the thing. And even with the transgender movement, so I learned my lesson from that. All right. I was like, I need to educate myself before I make a.
Was it quite a wholesome outcome for you after you watched that movie and you considered what had happened and you were able to have space and take a breath? Because I can only imagine how anxiety inducing having 100,000 followers demand things of you is. Ultimately, you're like, oh, this actually presented me an opportunity to learn something I wasn't aware of.
100%. It kind of puts me in a position to step back and before I make, you know, educate yourself on the matter. And I think that can go for everybody.
Yes.
Before you make an opinion. Yeah. And, you know, it may not sit well with you, but if you haven't educated yourself on the topic, I don't feel you have, I want to say you don't have a right to make an opinion, but I want to say that at the same time.
Yes.
I don't know if you'd agree with me.
I'd like to say it this way. If you are listening to this, please notice Rob had a very positive and ultimately very fruitful reaction to someone who engaged him on his level as a human, who didn't need to be this, that, or the other. They didn't make demands. They made helpful, generous offers. If you've noticed yourself in your life going around to people, accusing them of this, berating them of this, demanding that of them, it's not as effective as reaching out to them as a fellow human being having a normal human life. They may not know the things you know. They may not. So reach out and connect. Don't, I recommend that
attack.
You do that. Don't just attack, accuse, demand, and watch your manners online. It's impossible with text. Beautiful. It's so bloody hard, but
It was the white gay males that were coming for me too.
Okay.
Of all people. But with the whole transgender thing that was happening, I remember they're trying to take education out of schools here in Queensland, I think. And there was, what's her name? Pauline Hanson?
Pauline Hanson, yeah.
She was behind the whole thing. And so I reached out to, why'd her name just slipped my mind? PETA, who lives in Sydney. Cleary? No, PETA Friend? She's kind of started the big transgender movement. She started the first part of Mardi Gras with the transgender, the group within the Mardi Gras movement. So she's behind all that. Anyways, I reached out to her as we were social media friends, and I asked her about it. And so we ended up having coffee.
Nice.
And I said, I wanted to hear her story. And so I'm like, other people need to hear your story. So I had her back to my place.
Hmm.
We jumped on a Facebook Live and I interviewed her.
Oh, nice.
Right. And it's taking that time to educate yourself.
And doing it in a human way, an accessible 100%. Human way. Shouting at each other ain't helping.
Oh, the social media people. Love them.
Reframe.
Yeah. Keyboard warriors, they call them.
Yeah. I've also coined a phrase. I'll try and explore it now. It's between me and my partner mostly, but we call it twerpism. I say it with love.
I've heard it.
Have you?
I have heard it, actually.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen this beyond what me and my partner are saying, but I'm going to try and define it, the one I mean, as these well-meaning, beautiful people who are trying their best to fight the good fight, but they're getting so in their head about it, they've forgotten exactly what we're talking about, this kind of effective human way of communication. It is probably running up into themselves, their personal lives, and they're dealing with shit and it's hard, and therefore they're not very effective at communicating what they're intending and hoping to communicate, which ostensibly is more about connection, love, acceptance, togetherness, which is all stuff we probably all agree with. But the twerps are just like not ready to handle someone who's not ready to agree with them.
Yep.
And they'll let you know it. And it's like, fuck, dude, you're only hurting your own cause. Please stop being such a bloody twerp.
They're only hearing themselves.
Yeah, and that. Oh, God, like, it makes me sensitive now because I can just see them exploding. And that's okay. Maybe it's time to explode.
They get caught up in the emotion. They don't know how to handle the emotion yet. Or the rejection, or having another opinion that's different to theirs.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's when, you know, they're not ready to hear other people.
Because it's so easy to feel personally attacked by these issues because 100%. They're so deeply personal.
So another book drop while we're doing that through this podcast is The Four Agreements.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fuck yeah. Love it.
So anybody out there, if you haven't read The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, highly recommend it.
Yes.
It is a brilliant book. Anyone can take something away from it. But it's definitely a book that I pass on to a lot of my clients, but also a book that when shit goes a bit south in my personal life, I will go to this book and it brings me back to center.
Nice.
Right? So, yeah.
I've got a one-page summary of the four agreements that I frequently mail to people as well, email.
Nice.
So you can start with that. And if you like the one-pager, you can buy the book.
Ooh, send it to me.
I will. Yeah, I'll send you the link. No problem. Remind me because I'm going to forget. But I'm still... you know that thing we said would come back to us right near the start?
Yep.
I don't think it has, but I don't care anymore.
It's super important, but that's fine.
All right, moving forward. Ed's topic. I love to talk about... Oh, no, wait, my bad. I've completely skipped a few things. Let's get into your area of work and expertise. We've addressed a lot of it. Can we quickly just cover your coaching business, your why, and a little bit of your how?
Okay, so...
Is it called Lifting Stones?
Lifting Stones. And so that came, obviously... I think most people can figure out the whole concept behind that title, but it's lifting stones off your shoulders of the weights that we carry in our lives and placing them as a footpath moving forward. Ooh. So that's, is right.
Well, it dovetails so nicely. We're just talking about twerps, right? If you feel in your heart, in your mind right now, as we're talking, that you've experienced twerpism, perhaps that is hitting something inside of you that is this metaphorical stone. That might be the precise thing to help you create a path forward for empowerment, positive change, growth. Yeah, carry on.
And you know, when you think about it, you think about counselors, psychologists, and all that stuff. They can assist you in lifting the stone part, right? But then when yourself or me or myself or you come in, right, we help lay those as a footpath for them to move forward, right? So it's, I'm not saying counselors, psychologists don't help move forward as well, but it's helping them with direction is what we kind of do. And when I've been in the health and wellness space for about 10 years, like you said, personal trainer, massage therapist, network marketing. And that's when I kind of got into the whole coaching thing of, you know, coaching people through nutritional cleansing programs, coaching people in starting a business from home, mindset, etc. The only difference to what I did then and what I do now is I was part of a company. I was selling products. There was deadlines to hit targets, and it was somewhat spamming people with like, oh my God, look at this shake. The shake is delicious. You should buy the shake. It'll change your life, right? And I am not dissing the network marketing industry at all, because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have started on my self-development journey, which I am forever grateful for. And I still use the same products I started with 4 or 5 years ago. I still use it to this day. Oh, cool. And when I was doing that, and I did a few companies in the space, you know, CBD oil, travel, nutritional cleansing. And with every company and every experience that I've gone through, every relationship, every client, every person that I've helped, there has been a learning experience that you learn about somebody, you learn about yourself, you learn how to interact differently, you learn different personalities. And it was always interesting to me whenever I had interactions with other people, and seeing how they react or hearing their stories, you learned something. And it was really fascinating to me. So obviously, personal life happened. COVID happened. My mom ended up in hospital, right? And I was back in Canada dealing with all that stuff. And I mentally checked out, I guess. I didn't have the energy for people.
Yeah, anymore. You were done.
And I literally woke up one day, and this is before my mom's stuff happened. But I think we're in the middle of COVID. I think there is I can't remember if it was the presidential election going on, but I was doing crypto. I just lost a chunk of money in crypto. I had some trolls hitting me on social media, as they do. Calling me a scam artist, right? And it was just all these kind of blows. And I woke up one day and I had nothing, absolutely nothing. And I was actually reading a girlfriend of mine's post today, and she'd written something very similar to it. I was like, oh, fuck, yeah, I went through the same thing. But prior to that, I made it my mission going through COVID to post daily, to show up for people, to check in on people. I would write 10 to 20 people a day, even if I didn't know them on my friend list, I would send them a message, just, hey, check in and hope you're okay. I know we don't know each other, but I want to make sure you're doing all right. All right. And I did that. Now, it was just my routine. I would send voice clips to everybody on their birthday every day, saying happy birthday. Right. And it was just, I just wanted to show up to people, but it came to a point where there was a lot of expectations. Not from people, not only from people, but more so myself. And it drained me. And that's when I woke up one day and I'm like, I got nothing. And I'm done. And I checked out. I got off social media for about 3-4 months. And it was the best thing I ever did. And it was so freeing. People are like, you won't last 5 days. I'm like, all right. And it was like, I didn't even think about it. All right.
And can I tell you, Rob, one of my favorite quotes is a Jim Carrey quote. And he says, I might get it slightly wrong, but it's, I want people to get rich and famous so that they can discover it's not the answer.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And I'm going to bravely tell you, I'm not even slightly jealous of your 100,000 plus follower thing. That sounds like a nightmare.
Do you want to hear a dirty little secret?
You don't like it either?
Aside from people putting me on a pedestal because I have 100,000 followers.
And you are extremely beautiful.
Yeah, but
that's going to attract similar trolls and similar haters.
Yeah, but people see the number.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, oh my God, he's famous.
Yeah.
But here's the reality. Have you ever watched, there's a TV show and it talks about Instagram people wanting to be famous and they do a whole it's a project and a thing where they take ordinary people who have less than 500 followers and they make them into the famous.
Yeah.
Overnight, right? And they do all these things and it made me so disgusted. But the reality is I may have 100,000 followers, but 10% of that is actually seeing my content.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the dirty little secrets, but it's, you know, not all 100,000 people are like, oh, you must be getting 1 million messages a day. I'm like, no, I don't. I get like, you know, 10 to 20 messages a day if I'm posting content, right?
Yeah.
But
so it's not as big as it looks is what you're saying.
No. And there's different numbers that show different things, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as likes go, not everyone, there's a lot of people that see my content, but as far as numbers that people like it, it's all different. But people do put you on a pedestal because you have 100,000 followers. And I'm like,
yeah, there's that big number like slapped on your forehead, basically.
Yeah. And yes, it is a bit of an accomplishment, right? I remember when I hit 100,000, I was like, oh, this is an awesome accomplishment, right?
Yeah. But what does it mean? Why? What, you know? So,
but it,
this
yeah,
is what you're driving at, right?
It gives you, you know, for me, it's you have a bigger audience to create more of an impact, which is the cool part about it.
And if you don't do something meaningful, satisfying, important to yourself, then what is it for?
And on that, people ask me, how did you get to 100,000 followers, right? What do I need to do? And I'm like, well, you need to stop posting toxic content. When I'm posting, I try and post stuff that's educational, entertaining, or empowering. Right. If I can tick all three of those boxes in a post, great. If I can tick one of them, great. But I always try and follow that thing. How is this content going to serve somebody else? And people ask me, how did you get to 100,000? That's how I did it. I put positive content that gives people hope and gives people, I don't want to say hope, it's faith. Gives people faith because hope is a begging thing, right? So it's, for me, it gives people something to look forward to, something to work on, a different way of looking at something.
Yeah, something to get excited about, a bit of an uplift. 100%,
right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, when I make content and I post it, and if I get one message that said, oh man, I needed to hear this today, my job is done, right? And so when you think about coaching, going all the way back to that question that you asked me, why I do coaching is that it's impact.
Yeah.
Is the word, right? Nice. Creating a difference in someone's life.
Yeah. And if you don't turn your following or your presence or your platform into meaningful outcomes, it's just a number. You might as well be followed by 100 million bots. If they're not getting something or you're not doing something, that number is completely irrelevant.
And it feels so fucking good when you get a message like that. I tell you. Like, I'm sure you get it from your clients, right?
You know what? Just yesterday, this will be published later, but I just did, rather than exploring coaching for a second, I did a gay dating advice thing. Because coaching is not about advice. It's not about telling people how to live. But there's some real fucking truths. And, you know, for, I've got 4,000 followers and, you know, 10% of that sees most of my posts. But yeah, got 20 plus comments where people like, dude, I needed to hear this, or thank you so much. This really hit me in the feels. And I know I've done a good job when I make those posts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Even if you can get one comment, right? I'm set. Nice. Like, that's good.
Nice.
It's, you know, you've made an impact in somebody's life that you haven't even met somewhere on the other side of the world.
Nice.
That's my feel goods.
So, excellent.
Yeah. Then I go celebrate with wine.
Nice. Very good. So we are running at about 70 minutes now, or just under. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about shame and your relationship to shame. And then I think we'll round things out. Does that sound all right?
Sounds like a plan.
Very nice. Do you harbor shame today?
Reading this question as well, I was confused on it, but then I read past the second line and got a better understanding of it. Mm-hmm.
So the second line is like, what's your relationship to your shame?
Yeah, but it broke it down as far as relationships. And I read it as any gay shame.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, we can do gay shame.
But it's not gay shame, but it was more shame in, I guess, the person I was when I was going through my visa stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I was in survival mode. I was hungry to get my permanent residency here in Australia, and I was willing to do anything to get it, and the visa played a massive part in everything I did, said, thought. And so it affected relationships, and I hurt people.
Mm.
Unfortunately, because I was in survival mode.
Mm.
I lost a relationship that I truly cared about. And it still somewhat affects me today. And that was 5 years ago, you know, and it was, I am not that person I was when I was going through that, because my world revolved around me getting that visa.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It sounds like you've found your place of understanding and maybe complete acceptance of your behavior and your actions. But is there still some shame in here? Have you addressed it with this person, or is it incomplete?
I think it is incomplete.
Hmm.
Because there's still, 5 years later, in my dreams, all the time. It's just, he's still very present in my mind.
Mm.
And it's, I need to deal with it somehow. I don't know if it, I haven't gotten closure yet.
I imagine you'll write him a letter. Sorry, I shouldn't joke. I should not joke.
Listen, I made it my mission after we split up to get...
Oh, this is an ex? Sorry, I don't mean to out
anyone's identities. Yeah, no, this is an ex. I made it my mission to get through the visa process.
Yeah.
And to try again with him. But I didn't want to go through the visa process with him and have that sabotage our relationship.
Oh, yeah. That's real tough.
So when you think about shit that was going on behind the scenes, that is a huge, massive struggle thing that I've gone through.
Mm. Well, good luck with, you know, taking that to satisfying completion and doing what you feel needs to be done in order for you to be the person that you really want to be in this world. Mm. Thank you for sharing as well. Fucking hell, that's courageous.
That's something I really haven't shared much of too. So that relationship visa stuff.
Yeah.
It's all going to be in my book.
But I'm ready. Are you doing a memoir tell all?
Yeah, why not?
I heard that RuPaul's is coming out today. I've got
stories for days.
Yeah, you kind of do. Hey, you are an interesting guy. You have done a lot, and you know, this is probably a result of that thing that you told us earlier, that you seem to have a personality and a character that strives for experience. And I think that has taken you to high highs, like emotional highs, and low lows, emotional lows.
And every experience, there's been growth, right? And I think a lot of people go through these experiences and they don't figure out what the growth was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the biggest shame, you know? When people are stuck in cycles, they're not looking to the bit that has something to inform them.
Yeah, it's yeah, it's, I think that was, whenever I go through something, I find the lesson, whether it's positive or negative, right? Whether it was a traumatic experience or like things going through my mom, where was the growth? Where can I get growth from this? If it was a positive, but even going, coming out of a relationship, right? People often, okay, what could I have done different? Right? They don't reflect on themselves.
Fair enough. Nice. But,
yeah.
Thank you for sharing yourself with us, Rob. What, 3.6, being so literal about the show notes. It's very behind the curtains, isn't it? What is it? Parting the kimono? You can see a little too much. It's your personal message to the gays out there, the listeners. Did you come up with one? Are you feeling one strongly? What's something you'd like to say out loud that I'm aware you've probably said to 1,000 times more people than may ever hear on this podcast? But we'll see. What do you want to tell the gays? What's your personal message to the people or the gays?
Be kind to one another.
Why?
Just because the world has become a very toxic place. And be kind because you don't know what else somebody may be going through.
Yeah.
And it's, the world is not as easy as it used to be. And
not as simple as it used to be.
It's not as simple. It's not as easy. It's so complex, and everyone is dealing with something on some kind of a level. So it takes zero effort to be kind to someone. So just be kind.
Yeah. Default to, well, center kindness in your behavior and how you approach people. You know, if someone really pisses you off or their behavior is extremely strange or weird or upsetting, just try to grab that bit of kindness within you to go, where could they be coming from? What could they be dealing with? What could be driving their terrible behavior? Is me attacking them going to help?
Get curious.
Yeah.
That's the word.
With Jonathan Van Ness.
Yes.
Curious. I love JVN. He, she, they is such a beautiful example of vulnerability, being who you are. Wow. There's no surprise to me that they were casted for Queer Eye.
I love vulnerability. I'm all about it.
Yeah.
Hence why I'm like, I want the book.
Your dad's not.
No, we're working on him. He's retired now. I don't, you know, when it's just, you can't, it's, you know, the older generation is just, they're set in their ways.
Oh, I wouldn't. I don't like definitive statements like that.
I know, we could delve deep into that one too.
Yeah. I like the way you said we're still working on him. Another way, I guess, of saying that is you still hold, what's, and there probably is a word for this, but like hold your candle out for him. Like you're waiting and ready.
I still have faith that there is some sort of relationship that will be had between us.
I hope so, Rob. I hope so. There's a lot of gay boys out there and gay men that don't have great relationships with their dads, and I'll hold my candle out for all of them and hope for the best. Or pray for the best? Faith for the best?
Faith.
What's the verb? Have faith, I guess.
Verbs, pronouns.
I have faith about that.
Faith. Absolutely. Let's do it.
Thank you very much for your time today, Rob. Sometimes I do, well, every time I do the zany question round, but I recorded 2 weeks ago's episode yesterday, and I have not made a new zany question round. So I'm sorry, you don't get one. Listeners, listen,
I'll get over it.
Look up for the next one. And we've eaten up a chunk of time regardless. Thank you very much for spending
time. We could have easily done another hour, I reckon.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we will in the future, you know?
Maybe we will.
A year from
round
now.
Two.
Yeah, round
two.
Yeah,
we'll bring wine to the next one.
Check it in. Oh, yeah. That's, yeah. They can't see.
Bears and wine.
Bears and wine?
Bears, wine, and cheese.
Oh, that sounds nice. Yeah, we'll just start a whole new podcast.
There you go.
Me and my partner, Alex, are thinking about doing two men, one cup of tea each. The podcast.
But you got to leave the pauses in there.
Yeah, 100%. Rob, where can people find you, your coaching business, your socials, and more Rob Goddard?
Yeah, so on Instagram, you can find me at rgod09. And Facebook, just my name, Rob Goddard. And my website for my coaching is liftingstones.com.au.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and everybody in between. That was Rob Goddard. I'm Ed Wilson. For emails or feedback, go edward@gaberhoodpodcast.com, or check us out on the socials at Brown Bear Coaching, at A Gay Man Book, and at Gaberhood Podcast. With another email every week. I hope it's from a female.